Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back.
Another episode of Full Court Press. I'm Josh Franz, joined with Nick Merrick, and today's special guest and new member of Full Court Press, we'd like to welcome in Brian Edwards. Brian, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
All right, thanks, Josh. I'm Brian Edwards. I'm from Tucson, Arizona, up here at ASU now. I'm really happy to be on the show now. I want to talk about basketball. I've been watching it for years, of course. I'm a Rockets fan. I'm a Sun Devils fan. Now, being from Tucson, I do root for the Wildcats just a little bit, but you know what? All ASU, baby.
School pride. Gotta love it.
Sounds good. Nice to have you aboard. We have a largely dominated NBA show for you. We're going to start out by congratulating the Sportsman of the Year, LeBron James. What do you guys think about him being named Sportsman of the Year?
I don't think there's any question that he deserved it. If you're thinking about any sport, this is a guy that dominates, his sport. There's no doubt that right now he is the best player in the NBA. He's coming off a year where he was MVP. He was finals MVP for the Heat that, beat the Thunder in the finals. And he's a gold medalist on Team USA. I don't think there's any question that he's Sportsman of the Year.
I mean, those are literally the three stats you have to pull out, and that'll shut up any other contention. If you look at golf, there's not much going on in the golf scene. U.S. didn't really do that well either in the Ryder Cup. So there wasn't much contention there. Then if you want to switch gears, there's no NHL season, so they rarely get it anyways. So now if you look at baseball, there's been a couple of interesting picks that we were thinking about. I mean, obviously, a title, I think, would have had to come in the names of anybody like a Ryan Braun, a Matt Kemp,
Miguel Cabrera,
a Verlander, Miguel Cabrera,
Trout.
Even Trout. Those are probably like the five highest. Even Buster Posey might be in contention there with the MVP. Actually, he might probably be, now that I think about it, he'd probably be second on that list, that considering he won he's a gold glove winner, he got a ring this year, and then he's also the NL MVP. He'd probably be second runner-up now that we're just talking about it. But I agree. There's no doubt LeBron James deserves it. But, I mean, what can you say? The one of the best guys and the first NBA player to do so since his teammate Dwayne Wade did it back in 06.
Yeah, he's been able to dominate every aspect of the game of basketball. He just runs the floor however he wants to do. And when you do open it up to those other sports, there's really nobody who dominates their own field of play like LeBron James does.
Fun fact, 18th time LeBron James on the cover of Sports Illustrated with the Sportsman of the Year. 18 times.
Sounds like a lot.
Wow.
That's crazy.
All right, we all agreed on that. So let's move on to something a little more debatable.
I agree. I'm ready. I got my debate clothes on.
All right. Coach Popovich benched and sent home for a game Danny Green, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker. Then the Spurs were fined $250,000 because they did not play against the Heat. So do you guys think that fine was well worth it? Not enough? Should he have been suspended? What would you have done, Brian?
You know what? While I do think that, Popovich was in the right in doing so, he's coach of his NBA team, it's a business, and David Stern needs to protect his business. He's doing his job, and, what he did was the right move. I hate the fact that, Popovich, he's getting fined, or the Spurs team is being fined, this $250,000. But the fact of the matter is he sent home three huge stars, and another, starter for the Spurs. Going against, the Heat in Miami, this is going to, probably sell out game. Everybody's expecting a game of the week, pretty much. And he sent home three of the biggest names in NBA. And this is a league run through their stars. And it's just, it's upsetting for fans. It's upsetting for, the people that want to go out and watch this game. There's people that say, hey, I want to watch Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili play against, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade.
Well, Brian, it's interesting you say that because I'm actually going on the other side of the spectrum. Obviously, you mentioned the business. I kind of think of it as Commissioner Stern as the big business side. And then the head coach and general managers like Greg Popovich being the small business side. So the point that really defends you is this fact that in the NBA rules, it says teams are required to report as soon as they know a player will not travel because of injury. The league statement said in the Spurs, that there was that violation, and then they also said they didn't get out a proper in enough time, and it was against the best interest of the NBA. So that's where it'll offend you. However, at the same time, from a small business owner, it's Popovich's team. I understand they're run through the NBA, so they have to follow the guidelines. So I think if they would have been completely fine with it, they gave him enough time. But from a coaching standpoint, from the controversy of why did they bench him, it's his team to coach. He knows what he's doing. He's been in the finals a couple years back. He's consistently made playoffs, so it's not like he's a dumb coach by any means. He knows what he's doing. And one of the quotes he said in one of the interviews with him, that he goes, "I don't want my team to get banged up against a very strong opponent like Miami Heat this early in the season." It's something that Josh and I talked about. You were actually joking around saying Spurs don't care. They just need to get into the playoffs. Then they turn really good because they have they're the older veterans like Parker, Duncan, and Ginobili. Danny Green they just sent out there because they didn't want to put him against the big three of Miami. I don't know. I mean, I guess the way he handled it wasn't the best. If there's a rule, he's supposed to get it out. I'm not sure. $250,000 fine is.
I think it's a little excessive.
It's a little excessive. It could have been a slap in the wrist.
Right. I'm with you on Nick. It says in the rules that if there's an injury, they have to report it as early as they can. There was no injury, so he didn't break that rule.
Or if there wasn't.
He just wanted to rest.
The one that I read was that if they know a player will not travel
because they weren't hurt, so they didn't break that rule. So I don't understand how that plays an effect here. And
I guess they were thinking injury as in rest, and they wanted to ship him home. And then Dave Stern said, we only play Miami once. And I think that's the lamest response. Like, what, so you're going to tell a team they only play him once a year? You can't sit them against that one time? Like,
yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And I don't know. I mean, it's not the Spurs' job to make the league money. It's Greg Popovich's job to win games, win championships.
I agree.
He doesn't work for David Stern. He works for the owner of the Spurs. And actually, the commissioner of the league works for the owners as well. So Stern should have no authority to make Popovich pay money or the Spurs pay money for winning playoff games down the line and sitting out now.
I think this is an example of the sales racks when you go on shopping for any of our shopping fans listening, and almost like, come in, buy one, get one half off. Really small print, like size 4 font with purchase of $40 or more. Basically what this is kind of coming down to. It's just nitpicking. If they want to pull it out, they could have. David Stern figured he didn't want to get this out of control this early in the season and figured he wanted to put some discipline in action. And that's what he came up with, I guess.
Right. Well, the Heat still only won by 5 points. It was a closely contested battle the entire game. But looking further into the season, how does this affect later on? If the Heat clinched the playoffs with 10 games to go and they sit out the last 3 games of the season, does that mean they're going to be fined $750,000 for not playing the last 3 games of the season?
Well, I guess I guarantee you they're going to report them earlier. And they're actually, right now, just to show you how good of a coach he is, him and the Popovich and the Spurs and then Oklahoma City Thunder, the only two teams with 14 wins in the NBA.
Right. And they don't need to build up their regular season wins. It doesn't help them win a championship.
Why? There's no point. They're already running away with it right now. Memphis is up top, so there's a little race there just because the game's behind. Memphis played 3 less games, but I don't know. It's an interesting move. I guess didn't hear much of Brian. We pretty much quieted you right away.
I was trying to sneak in there. The last thing I really want to say is the idea there's nothing against, you know, sitting out players. But, you know, the thing is, you know, they might sit out one or two players, and Popovich sent home, you know, 4 starters.
True.
You know, so, yeah, you definitely want to rest your guys. They're coming off a 8-day road stretch, you know, within like a 5-6 games within that stretch right there.
I think that's right. I think so they played 5 games in 7 days on the road.
So, yeah, that's rough. And, you know, that was the final game of that. And then they had a big game at home, you know, coming up within the next 2 days there. So,
good point.
If you want them rested for that, sure. But you can't just send home, you know, 4 starters. Because, I mean, to some extent, it's almost like it was a statement saying, hey, we're playing the Heat. We don't want it. You don't matter to us. You're in the East. Why should we play our best guys against you?
Well, that's true. That's exactly what it is. And if they meet them in the NBA Finals, they don't want to show them. This is the one time they played them this year. They don't want to show them their entire hand. There's no reason to.
I mean, it's a smart move on both sides, I guess, because they're both playing the tug-of-war game right now. Popovich wants to get as much leverage as he can. Apparently, that action went a little too far. But now, hey, the good news for him, it's only, what, week 4 maybe the NBA season, maybe week 5, I guess, getting into it. So to make a mistake in a month into the season, not that big of a deal. They're going to get over it right away. It's just, unfortunately, you're going to have a bill on your table. $250,000.
Right, they have to pay that, but as you said, they'll get over it. But now there's a new situation arising in San Antonio. There's a
This one's worse.
This one might be worse. I don't know. There's a new situation. Tim Duncan and Tony Parker were at a Halloween party dressed up in costumes as thugs, for lack of a better word, and with Joey Crawford in between them. Tony Parker had an eye patch on, both of them holding fake guns to a guy dressed as Joey Crawford, the NBA referee. We know many years back that Crawford ejected Tim Duncan off a playoff game for just sitting on the bench. So this goes back pretty far. We're not getting into all the details, but do you think David Stern should take action on this, Brian?
Oh, well, you know, I think he has no business getting involved in this one, because the fact of the matter is, it was Halloween, and if you read about it, it's Duncan was dressed up as the Punisher, and Ginobili was dressed up as Nick Fury from the Avengers. So I mean, they're two comic book characters. They're holding guns on a guy dressed up as Crawford. That's obviously sending some sort of message. But you know, they were smiling and laughing about it. I don't think, you know, there's no animosity about it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's Halloween. They're out having fun. It's their personal lives. I don't think that, you know, their business lives should be affected by this.
That's the one quote I was kind of looking if you were going to say that, is the whole thing with sports, I feel, as it's been, players really don't have any more personal lives. When you are considered an athlete, you're a public figure. That means everything you do reflects on the people, a.k.a. the general Joes like ourselves here. And we have every right to go investigate their lives. Their lives pretty much completely open, minus some very obvious personal matters in their life. But when you say you're going to be an athlete, you're going to be a public figure, you're going to be representing kids, you're going to have role models that look up to you. I don't know exactly what action I give. I think something needs to be done about this, though. The fact that Mike got him off the case, this is an October 31st picture. It's now kind of coming out in early December. So I don't know why it took a month for somebody to finally put this out and be like, hey, this is kind of controversial. Maybe they just figured, oh, we already had the Popovich controversy. Let's throw another controversy in for the Spurs. So, and it's in a negative spotlight again, or at least could be anyways. At least I guess that was the goal of the person who released it. My only problem is I just don't know how you handle it. I think there needs to be something done, because think about it. That would be a year and a half ago with the umpire who blew the perfect game for Detroit. And then he came out and apologized. Obviously a little different than Joey Crawford. Joey Crawford never got an apology to the team. But the fact that the players just can't do that. I mean, those are players. Those are working. Those are private. Like, a referee and umpire are private figures. The athletes are public figures. I don't know if you could just be saying that about anybody, because that, like, kind of shows you're at a higher status than them. It's a little bit of a low blow. I really don't think they're going to do anything about it. I think they should.
Well, it wasn't the most classy of acts by these two really classy individuals, but I don't think it was anything that warrants a suspension or a fine. Maybe I'll call into the commissioner's office to just say, hey, guys, we can't be doing this. Because you mentioned they are role models, but role models for kids, you see kids all the time, they'll be like playing cowboys and Indians, or they'll be playing with water guns or Nerf guns or BB guns. So the fact that guns were involved really, to me, doesn't make them any less of role models. And
I agree.
Kids could learn how to joke around. They weren't hurting anybody. It was a joke. I don't see anything wrong with it.
I mean, I see the joke. I guess the only other issue would be more of athletes have been more focused on like their public websites, be it like Facebook or Twitter, especially Twitter now recently. And the media experts of their specific team are kind of the ones hankering down, like, you can't say this on Twitter. This is for our team. So I feel like if you can't express in words certain things about your team or your personal life, you shouldn't be able to send pictures, even if they express something that's a joke that could be taken the wrong way. Because words are the same thing. Words may be meant one way and actually might be the right way for the players where they aren't in trouble. But if somebody reads them as they're being taken the wrong way, that's what gets them in trouble. And the whole time they're like, well, this stinks because I didn't even want to get in trouble. Like, that wasn't even my context of the story.
Right. It might not represent the organization well, but you have to look into the intentions, look into what they were doing. They don't want to hurt Joey Crawford. They wanted to make a joke, get some laughs, have some fun on Halloween. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, along
with, you know, the whole guns thing, you know, obviously guns have been a problem, you know, the past couple of years, the whole gun rights things, you know, everyone's talking about it. So, you know, you hate the fact that they are making a joke using guns. You know, guns are never a laughing matter, but still, they're out there having fun. And, you know, with, you know, Joey Crawford, you know, Tunkin could, you know, maybe issue an apology since this came out and just say, hey, you know what, there's nothing against it. You know, things happen in the heat of the game, but you know what, that's that life. This is our life here. So, you know what, we could talk to them, make sure things are cleared up, that there's nothing there between them. You know, I don't think Duncan wants to kill Crawford.
No.
So I don't think that's a problem there.
Speaking of guns, by the way, Monday Night Football, touchy subject there too. But I don't know. I mean, what's the verdict? Do you think, so you guys are kind of both saying, eh, it's just a joke, nothing to be done. I think it's something serious, at least more serious than you guys are both thinking. I don't think a fine's going to be, I don't think anybody's going to come of it, but maybe it's kind of like you were saying, Josh, like slapping the wrist, but the next time there's going to be a
well, there won't be a next decent. Time, just because of all the negative attention.
That's true.
I mean, players are obviously going to realize that there's not always cameras around, but I don't think there's anything that can come of this that's too excessive. Let's move on to our now weekly segment of Ballers and Fallers. Brian, get us going.
All right, well, let's go ahead and start off with my baller. Going to go ahead and take Hornets center, Robin Lopez. You know, he's been playing some pretty solid basketball with, you know, Anthony Davis out here. Past couple games, he's been averaging, you know, about 17 points a game. It's somewhere, you know, 6-7 rebounds a game. Now, this is a guy that, you know, with Anthony Davis on the bench, you know, because he's hurt, he's gonna be a producer. And, you know, if you want to pick him up in fantasy basketball, you know, he's a great guy to pick up right now.
Definitely true. I did pick him up in fantasy basketball. He played a good game for me the other night. I'm happy about him. We used to watch him here in Phoenix. It's nice to see him have success in another part of the country also. We'll talk about the Hornets a little bit later. But, he's playing well right now. It's just, we're curious to see how he plays when he's not in a starting role or a prominent role anymore.
Because, you know, when he was with the Suns, you know, he's obviously behind Gortat, and, you know, he didn't do much of anything, and that's why he's not in Phoenix anymore.
Right. All right, so let's move on. Who's your faller?
My faller, you know, it's kind of a tight one for me there. Going to have to go with, you know, at least one of the Lakers' big men, either Pau Gasol or Dwight Howard. Not so much for how they've been playing. Well, not so much for how Dwight Howard's been playing. He's been playing solid basketball. But he did come out and say that, you know, if he can't win a championship with the Lakers, he's going to find another team that he thinks can. You know, he might have been joking. But, I mean, you can't be saying that thing about your team. You know, this is a team that, you know, is trying to, you know, start to build around Howard. I mean, it's still Kobe's team. There's no questioning that. But, you know, he's kind of been a diva these last few years back when he was in Orlando. And, you know, then Orlando goes out and trades him. You know, he wanted to get out of there. They let him. They fulfilled his wishes. And now he's coming out and saying things again, even though he got what he wanted.
Right.
But then, of course, with Pau Gasol, he's, you know, hurt a little bit. He hasn't been playing stellar, and, you know, he's a guy that the Lakers need to contribute, but he hasn't been doing what he's supposed to be doing. And, of course, now once again, you know, like the past couple of years, he's getting popped into the trade conversation as somebody that the Lakers might want to shop around and try and get another piece.
Well, yeah, Pau Gasol played great in the triangle offense because he's a great passing big man who can post up, command double teams, and score on single teams. But now, with the Mike D'Antoni offense, it's not his forte. He's taking 12 to 14 foot jump shots on a regular basis, and he's not posting up. So that's understandable why he's not dominating right now to go along with the tendonitis in his knees. He's taken a couple nights off. He'll be back, and we'll see how that reflects the rest of his season. And for Dwight Howard, as a Laker fan, I don't care what he said. He said, if I don't think I can win a championship, I don't want to play here. And what NBA player is not having that thought go through their head? If they don't want to win an NBA championship, why would they want to be where they're playing to begin with?
I mean, obviously, everybody always wants to, you know, get out there and win their championships. I mean, that's why LeBron left Cleveland, and, you know, now he's got his ring. But, I mean, even before they won a championship, you know, he came out and, you know, he said that, hey, maybe, you know, later on in my career, I would want to go back to Cleveland. But, you know.
Right. I mean, every player plays to win a championship. If he doesn't want to win a championship, he can leave. That's fine.
Yeah, but don't leave after 1 year. I mean, come on. I even know the pieces are there, but you just don't do that. What, LeBron James going to go with Bosh and Wade and be like, man, you guys stink. We finished runners-up. I'm leaving. Like, no.
Right. Yeah, no, it takes more than 1 year.
Heart. Yes.
It doesn't reflect how the Lakers are at all because they have the pieces there to contend for a championship. He hasn't even played with a starting point guard yet. It's too early to make that announcement. But he's just saying, if I don't think I can win a championship, I'm going to move on. And what player shouldn't be thinking like that?
I think Brian's word diva is the best to describe that situation. That's all he is.
Yeah, he's been a diva for years now.
Almost 7-foot-tall diva.
He goes back and forth. You think he's mature, and then he says things like this and things he said in Orlando, and I can't get a grip on the guy. But now I'll do my ballers and fallers. My baller this past week is David West, power forward for the Indiana Pacers. In his last three games, he's averaged 23.3 points per game, 9.7 rebounds a game, 4.7 assists per game, a steal a game, and 1.3 blocks a game. He's leading the Pacers to somewhat of a successful season to get this year going.
Yeah, no, the Pacers definitely needed that offensive help. You know, they've been struggling a little bit. Roy Hibbert obviously hasn't been producing the way they've been needing him to. And that's, you know, really hurt the Pacers early on in the season so far here.
Well, right now, a game below 500, they stand also leading the NBA in rebounds and also third in defense. So that's got to play a big role. That's why West statistics he pulled out were pretty good. I guess we'll see when they're more battle-tested, maybe if Derrick Rose can get back in the next couple of months. And they haven't. It's not like they haven't been playing any weak opponents either. So kudos to him for getting Player of the Week from you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to him. Good job, David West. Now, my Faller of the Week comes from a guy who's on the Clippers, obviously one of the deeper rosters in the league, but Caron Butler needs to produce from the perimeter for this Clippers team to be successful. In the last week, his last three games, only 18 points combined in those three games. He's averaging 2.3 rebounds a game, 1.3 assists a game, and one steal a game. That's just not going to get it done. He could be looked on as the number two or number three leading scorer in LA behind Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, and he's just not producing at that level right now.
Well, he is definitely struggling a little bit right now. He shoots the ball a lot, and you know when he's on, but you know right now he's not.
But he's also great at attacking the basket. He can break down defenders and attack on those kickout passes from Chris Paul, and he's just not getting to the bucket right now. And as you said, settling for those jump shots that just aren't falling right now.
Yeah, no, but I mean he can make some circus shots back there, and you know I've watched some of these games, and he'll have somebody in his face. And he'll twist something around, and I don't think it's possible. I don't know how he does it, but he turns around, he makes it happen. But the thing about the Clippers right now, though, is Chauncey Billups is starting to get back in there. You know, he's still, you know, obviously coming off that injury, so it's going to take him a little bit of time to, you know, acclimate back to the speed of the game, and you know, just, you know, get test his body, make sure he's where he needs to be. But I don't think he's going to be a huge problem just because Billups is going to be able to come back in there and, you know, be another scoring option for the Clippers.
Right, and he's another great passer who's unselfish, who could possibly get Caron Butler the ball in some better situations as well. So that's my baller and faller. Brian did his. Nick will do his when we go back to college basketball later in the show. But before we're done with the NBA, let's go around and pick our game to watch this week. Brian, go ahead.
All right, I'll start it off. I'm going to go ahead and take Houston at the Spurs. Now, a couple days later, the Spurs are actually in Houston. But, you know, these are two, you know, pretty good teams going in so far. Houston's obviously, you know, having a bit of success with James Harden. He's, you know, been scoring a lot. Houston currently the number three team scoring the league, about 103 points a game. And San Antonio's, you know, back there just number five, only about a point or two behind per game. A big difference, though, there's you got, you know, San Antonio, better defense, but I mean, you know, you got, you know, a bunch of young guys in Houston with Jeremy Lin, Harden, Omar Asik going up against Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker. So I think it's a fun two games this weekend.
More Spurs attention. Josh, who you got?
Well, before I say who I have, I picked the Spurs last week, and then four guys didn't play. So just
true.
Hope for your case that nobody's resting when they watch that game. My game is on Thursday between the Knicks and the Heat. Melo, LeBron, what else do you need? You have, well, if you want anything else, here's Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. But I think that small forward matchup, Melo might be at the four, but they should be covering each other. It's going to be something to watch.
It should be a lot of fun. I think Melo's MVP right now in the season. You know, 20 games in, but right now he's playing, you know, up there. So
whenever the Knicks are in first place and one guy is dominating for the Knicks, he's definitely going to be in an MVP discussion. Nick, who do you have?
All right, well, mine's shocker, shocker. Not that good of a game, actually, unfortunately. It's only the Lakers against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
They've only met in the playoffs over the past few years.
Not that great of a matchup. I mean, come on. It's the Lakers are 8-9, but real talk. Obviously, one of the games to highlight as well, just from all the implications. Don't mind the Lakers' record or their banged-up team right now. Always a good one to watch, always competitive on the road in Oklahoma City. That one's on Friday night. But, guys, now let's switch some gear over to some NCAA basketball. When we have some big news in the AP, as Kentucky is now ousted from the top 25 a week after losing to UCLA and sliding from number, excuse me, not UCLA, a week after losing and sliding from number 3 to number 8, Then they dropped two games, one to Notre Dame and then one to Baylor. And that Baylor game actually snapped the Wildcats' 55-game home winning streak, which was the longest in the nation. They went from eighth to unranked again, the biggest drop to date since the polls in 1990. What's your take on this? Is it something important to note in the basketball world, or is it a good thing for Kentucky, in other words?
Well, I think it's bad for Kentucky. Obviously, it's a wake-up call, which is something you want. But in the long run, it's not going to be bad because you look at Kentucky, and they're not a team who definitely needs to win during the regular season. We've talked about this similarly with the Lakers, the Heat, the Celtics, and the Spurs. They just need to make it to March, develop their young players, and they'll be successful then. However, I think it's a bad thing for NCAA basketball when these classic powerhouse dominant programs are not dominating at the moment. You'll hear Colin Cowherd talk about this all the time, how these front-running dominating programs need to be the highlight of college basketball, or really sports in general, because that's what draws people in, that's what makes money. When you have George Mason, there's obviously not as much of a fan base around George Mason as there is around Kentucky. It just makes the game more exciting.
Well, you know, yeah, that's definitely rough for Kentucky, but I mean, I still think, you know, it's not really that bad of a thing. I mean, there's other teams that, you know, that are powerhouses, and Kentucky can very easily, you know, return to, you know, prominence here. I mean, it's still Kentucky, and yeah, it's a young team. They need to develop. I mean, last year, they obviously don't have the power they had last year with Kid Gilchrist and Anthony Davis, but this is a team that once they get the guys, you know, going, they could still make a run come tournament time, and I don't think it's, you know, something too much to worry about. But as for basketball as a whole, there's other teams. You know, you still got Duke at number two and Indiana at number one. There's plenty of other powerhouse teams that are still playing well.
Well, we're going to talk about actually the number one, number two matchup in just a second. But I don't know. I think this is actually for Kentucky. This may be the best thing that's happened to their program, just because they've always had that pressure from Calipari ever since he stepped foot on campus. He's always been in the AP top 25 poll. Now it's a chance to say, okay, this really isn't my best recruiting year. Obviously the talent's there, but it's not the most mature team he's had coming in, where there's really no NBA proven talent out of those freshmen. I mean, he had John Wall, then he mentioned Kid Gilchrist, Anthony Davis, then he had Terrence Jones.
Rose in Memphis.
He had Derrick Rose in Memphis before he came to Kentucky. So, I mean, that's already four back-to-back-to-back years where he had at least a superstar who has ended up being a lottery pick in the NBA. So that pressure is going to definitely relieve him. It'll give him a better chance in the SEC, which is turning into a better basketball conference. I don't know. I mean, it's for their program, though. It really isn't the end of the world. They're out of the top 25 now. Big whoop. They're still going to be in the top 64 teams. They're still going to make the playoffs, or the March Madness, so to speak. Excuse me.
Still with the SEC tournament, most likely.
Very good chance to do it, unless Florida. I could see Florida taking them on that. That'd be a great.
We'll see how far they progress at that point.
But in terms of recruiting, the one thing I pulled out from recruiting is just on so maybe Monday, December 3rd was a bad day when they officially dropped out of the polls, but Tuesday, December 4th, pretty darn good one, as they got the oral commitment from Karl Towns Jr., a 6'11 forward who was number one according to ESPN in the 2015 class, which means he's currently a sophomore now. However, he's saying he's going to graduate early, and now he's in the 2014 class. So ESPN put him as the number three recruit there. And they also have two top five recruits coming in next year for college basketball. So Calipari's program really does not take a hit from this, because players still want to play for a prestigious program like him. Also, fun fact is Karl Towns Jr. actually played in the Dominican team for the Olympics, which is part of the reason why he had the connection with Calipari already. But with them knocking out now, to switch gears, Duke has the longest current run of the poll, 101 weeks, which started in the preseason poll back in 2007, 2008. Wow. So brings up the question, does Duke deserve to pass Indiana after beating opponents like number four Ohio State? I believe it was number six at the time, Louisville, and then
they were number five at the time.
Number five at the time, and then also getting a nice win against Calipari in Kentucky earlier in the year, second game of their season.
Well, as you mentioned, they've beaten three top five teams, and they're a top five team themselves at the time. Only one team left in that top five that they didn't take care of, and that's because they didn't play them. I mean, they have the most quality wins for a team that would be considered at the top of the polls. So in my opinion, yes, they deserve to be number one in the country right now. I'm not saying they're better than Indiana, but they're more proven, more tested, and have better wins. So number one for me it is.
You know what? I'd still say that they are number two. I think Indiana definitely holds on to that one spot. Just, you know, they haven't done anything to lose it. Duke, without a doubt, has played, you know, the best schedule so far, and they have the most right to, you know, be there right now. But Indiana came in at one. They have a solid team. This is a team that, like I just said, they haven't done anything to lose it. They need to stay at one until Duke proves that they should overtake them.
So are you of the belief that the only way Indiana drops to number one is if they lose a game?
I wouldn't necessarily say a loss, but
then what,
I mean,
what else does Duke need to do?
You know, I mean, obviously Duke needs to keep winning, but I'd say, you know, maybe Indiana needs to do something to perform a little bit lower than, you know, what they've been doing. They keep winning. They're winning good, well enough to maintain this number one seed, number one spot in the AP poll. But until, you know, maybe a team, you know, somebody not ranked, you know, nobody team, you know, pushes them to their limit, maybe that's when, you know, you need to put the brakes on Indiana and say, hey, wait a second, Duke needs to move up to number one here.
So instead of having Duke pass them when they beat a top five school, you think they should drop down when they still win a game, just not as a great win against a not impressive school?
Let me jump in here, because I'm a... Hey, for once, I'm actually happy to have Brian on the show. I'm supporting him on this.
Well,
I'm
you're
sorry,
also a
Josh.
North Carolina fan.
I am. No, but you're a Duke fan, too, to be fair. The reason why is it's kind of just like NCAA football, where it takes a lot to pass a team if you have identical records. Indiana technically does have one more win. I agree with the point that Duke is so much more proven against tougher opponents, but it's not like Indiana's been doing bad. Every single game they pretty much walked away with, except for Georgetown, when Georgetown was unranked. However, Georgetown's now ranked 15 because they are not a fluke. And they absolutely smoked my Tar Heels in the Big Ten East Challenge.
Duke's been playing Indiana. I agree. They should have played North Carolina.
That's probably how it should have been, at least in terms of the polls. But also, Indiana's leading the NCAA in points per game with 87.8. So even when you're playing the teams like North Dakota State and I don't even know this, Bryant University, some of these other random schools, it's not like they're just like, oh, I'm beating them 70-56. Like, they're consistently getting up towards 100 points in all those games. So that's kind of where at least they still have that separation. If they lose one in the upcoming stretch, which is very doubtful, however, there is a game on the 15th against Butler. That one could be their only test until they actually get into Big Ten play.
All right, well, this is my last argument for Duke to be number one.
Okay.
I think you guys are putting too much weight on the preseason polls. If we were to take a poll right now of the games that have been played and ignore who was ranked better to start the year, who would you rank number one right now? Would it be Indiana or would it be Duke? Because Duke's beaten the better teams, and so if Indiana didn't start on top, would they be on top if you were to do it right now?
Well, I mean, this just kind of goes back to the argument, you know, there shouldn't be preseason ranks until you get a couple weeks into the season. You know,
that's exactly how people feel.
Obviously make the argument for football all the time because, you know, this last year USC was number one, and we all saw how that ended up for them. So, you know, when you put it that way, I'm going to have to say I do agree with you, Josh.
Yeah.
Duke would be number one if there was no preseason ranks. But Indiana did come in at number one, and they haven't done anything to lose.
And the matter of fact is that's not how the way the college basketball world works. I agree with your point there as well. I'm not saying, I mean, I outright said they're playing better opponents.
Right.
They still got 20 votes for first place votes in the AP. Indiana took 45 of them. So it's not like they aren't getting any recognition. They're still getting the recognition.
Right.
However they calculate their points, their point totals, the USA polls has Indiana 19 ahead of Duke, 768 to 749. And then the AP poll has them about 37, although there's like a 1605 to 1577. So, I mean, point-wise, they're really close, too. Again, I think what might favor Duke is I think the ACC is going to be an easier test for Duke, which will allow them to jump. Because, I mean, the Big Ten AC Challenge ended up 6-6. I still think the Big Ten's a better conference overall, at least this year, just with all the top 10 talent they have on the lineup. But, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Again, if you're looking at your way, there's no pre-rankings, Duke should be number one. But if you're looking at the pre-rankings, everybody's going to be glued to that. Indiana didn't do anything to lose that ranking. It's not like they're like, man, they really stunk. The only time you could say that's against Georgetown.
Right, I agree. It might be a little unjust, but I have Duke. You guys have Indiana. That's fine. Nick, move on to your ballers and fallers. I know you did it a little differently this week. Share it with everybody.
All right, I will. I'll make this one quick for us too. No games to watch this week. The only one I'll throw this one out there too. We really weren't going to do it, but maybe Saturday night, tune into Illinois at Gonzaga. That's 13 against number 10. Could be interesting. But for my baller, I'm actually going out northeast to Syracuse. I'm going to give it to Michael Carter Williams, the 6'6" sophomore. He finished two games, 28 points, 17 rebounds, 20 assists, 6 steals. And in both those games, they were against Arkansas and Eastern Michigan. So you're like, great, not quality opponents. But he was one rebound away from a, or three rebounds away from a triple double, and one assist away from a triple double in both those games. So that's why I gave it to him. Plus, Syracuse is a powerhouse. So a leader to step up like that is very fascinating. However, my honorable mention, I'm going to give you guys, at least you, Josh, specifically a shout out with Duke, because Mason Plumlee has been the real deal thus far this season. 41 points, 28 boards, 17 of those rebounds came against Ohio State in the victory. Also a couple blocks, shooting 60%, double-doubles in both wins. So I had him up there as an honorable mention. If it wasn't for Carter getting close triple-double accolades, it would have been him. Sorry, Plumlee. maybe my UNC bias also came in there a little bit. But I really don't think it did. Triple-double. Come on, almost back-to-back triple-doubles. You got to give it to him. But now my faller of the week had actually going a little different. I'm not going to pick a player because it's hard to. If I was, I could almost say any of the Kentucky starting five for dropping two to put him out of the polls, because that's pretty embarrassing. I'm going to go with my faller as a game. I'm going to say the Tennessee Volunteers against the Georgetown Hoyas. No player had more than 8 points in that one. The game's finished 37-36 in a Georgetown victory, 18-16.5. What is this, middle school JV basketball we're watching?
I think Jake Taylor on his knees blindfolded would have put up 30.
Unbelievable. But I don't know.
Sorry.
I guess, by the way, I realized I skipped over one of our segments. So to close the week off, we had a breaking news today about the New Orleans Hornets, or maybe not.
Yeah, we might have some Pelicans playing basketball.
Yeah, apparently the 2013-2014 season might be the first year that the New Orleans Hornets become the New Orleans Pelicans. And that got us thinking, what other NBA team should change their nickname? Nick, start us off.
We're going a little fun here, so let's have a fun segment to close up our semester. And I'm going to actually go with the Indiana Pacers. Not sure how the Pacers ever got there, so mine may be a little more boring than your guys from what I've heard, but I'm going to go with the Indiana Cardinals, maybe. More fitting for them, at least go with the State Bird. Josh just joked to me, I already could read it off his head.
Yeah, we need a Cardinals in every professional sport?
It's another one, but I mean, it's just so, what's a Pacer have anything to do with Indiana? If my secondary one, just make the Charlotte Bobcats back to the Charlotte Hornets if they really become the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, you might as well have a Hornet.
What are you going to be, a Pelican Peckers? Are you got a mascot name right there? All right, well, Brian, who you have?
I'm going to go ahead with Golden State. You know, I don't really quite. They started out as the Philadelphia Warriors, bounced around for a while until they ended up at San Francisco and became Golden State. And the Warriors really has nothing to do with anything. So I was thinking, you know, maybe let's go with Golden State Earthquakes. You know, that's important back there in the San Fran area.
Yeah, there's definitely earthquakes in California. They're dangerous. They're scary. They're big. That defines a basketball team right there a little bit better than a Cardinal, Nick. What do you think?
Sounds like a really good Oreo blizzard at something like a nice blizzard at Dairy Queen.
Hey, you never know. You can get some sort of promotion
going
on.
Yeah, can I have a large, extra large, please, extra stuff and make that a Golden State Earthquake? Thanks.
Sounds good. It really does. All right, we'll move on to mine now. The Utah Jazz were originally in New Orleans. They were the New Orleans Jazz because of the music there in New Orleans, Louisiana. We all know some of the reputations of that street, Bourbon Street, that area. Anyway, moving on. So it really has nothing to do with Utah. So I'm going to make mine the Utah Slopes for all the mountains and slopes and
go
snowing
slopes.
And yeah,
slopes.
Go slopes. Of course, the Utah slopes.
Of course, and every time you just go whoosh. Every time they make a,
it's perfect.
Yep, and when they're not doing so great, you just gotta say, yeah, slopes on a downward trend once again.
It's so easy.
Or,
for
or
us
they're just
to,
taking the ski lift
them
up to the top. I mean, you have so many journalistic
cliches.
Puns.
It's
this
perfect.
Is great.
Of course, he had a great one over here. He was kind of discussing the logos. And
when they're doing bad, you get Lindsey Vonn. You put her on a T-shirt. She's going down the slopes. They have a photo shoot with the team. It's perfect. It
you
makes
know, it
everybody
sexy.
Happy.
Imagine a little sweaty. Get Vonn a little sweaty, too, on the shirt. Now we're getting a little better.
All right, now you like the team name, don't you?
Can't complain with Lindsey Vonn up on there.
Nope. I think she was in ESPN swimsuit edition, too,
last
year.
Wouldn't be surprised. But that'll do it for this episode of Full Court Press, and that'll do it for our first semester of Full Court Press. Everybody have a safe and happy holiday. We'll be back in January. For Brian Edwards and Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Franz. Until next time.